This is Bloomberg Law with June Grosso and Michael Best.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bloomberg Law. June Grosso is out today. I'm Michael Best. In 1972, the Supreme Court dismissed an appeal about whether there was a constitutional right to same-sex marriage because the court said the case did not involve a substantial federal question. But over the last few years, the legal tide has turned, and some federal circuit courts have recently held that same-sex couples have a constitutional right to get married. Given the growing number of cases on this issue, many expected the Supreme Court to resolve the question once and for all. But today, the Supreme Court decided that it would not hear challenges to decisions in favor of same-sex couples made by the 4th, 7th, and 10th circuits. The result is that bans on same-sex marriage in those states are invalid, and same-sex couples there will be able to get married. Governor Gary Herbert of Utah, one of the states whose ban on same-sex marriage was overturned, expressed displeasure with the Supreme Court's refusal to hear these cases.
I am surprised about this and disappointed. I believe that the people deserve to have this hearing taking place at the Supreme Court level to determine, you know, what is a significant issue of our time.
Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring, who had refused to defend his state's anti-gay marriage law, celebrated the court's decision today not to take action.
This is a tremendous moment in Virginia history. We will continue to fight discrimination wherever we find it. But today, we celebrate a moment when we move closer to fulfilling the promise of equality.
Today, we'll be talking about the implications of the Supreme Court's decision to stay away from the same-sex marriage issue with Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr, and also with noted constitutional law scholar Steve Sanders of Moorer Law School at Indiana University, who's been closely following same-sex marriage litigation throughout the country. Gentlemen, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
Great to talk with you, Michael.
Greg, let's start with you. This decision is a surprise, isn't it?
It sure was to me. I've been talking to plenty of people on both sides of the debate and neutral people, and there was a very broad consensus that the court would have to take this up at this point. The court obviously felt differently.
Steve, what was it that made everybody think that this was going to be taken up by the court today?
Well, I think, Michael, it's the recent history is that sooner or later, every major social question, every major political question seems to come to the Supreme Court. This has been going on for a long time now. The country has had this debate. Lower courts have decided it. So it seemed inevitable that the Supreme Court would have to take one of seven appeals from seven cases that had come to it. This is probably the greatest expansion, the greatest single expansion of individual liberties we've seen in our history based on something the Supreme Court didn't do. Let's be clear, though. There are other cases potentially bubbling up to the court from the Sixth Circuit, from the Ninth Circuit. There are other cases. There's a case in the Fifth Circuit from Texas, a case in the Eleventh Circuit from Florida that hasn't been scheduled yet. This by no means means the Supreme Court is taking a pass on the issue for this entire term, much less forever. It simply says that it decided to take a pass on the first batch of cases it got. If, as some people think is at least possible, the Sixth Circuit parts company with other circuits and decides there is not a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, that will create a circuit split, and a circuit split is traditionally the quickest ticket to Supreme Court review.
Well, given that there were that this does have such large implications, it's probably worth talking about just how much of the country is affected by this. Greg, how many states now are going to have same-sex marriage as a result of the court's decision to stay out of this issue?
Most likely 30. There are. We started with 19 when the day began. There are five states whose cases were directly up here at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear all those cases. So now there are appeals court rulings that are going into effect that will allow same-sex marriage there. In addition, there are six other states, Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, West Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, where they are under the jurisdiction of one of those appeals courts whose cases were up before the Supreme Court today. So, and in each of those cases, those states, there is a lawsuit already out there challenging the same-sex marriage ban, and the courts handling those cases are going to be bound by that appeals court decision.
We're talking today to Greg Storr of Bloomberg News and Professor Steve Sanders about the Supreme Court's decision not to hear same-sex marriage appeals that were pending a certiorari decision today. Bloomberg Law is brought to you by GE Capital. GE Capital provides more than money. They can also bring expertise from across all of GE. If you just need a loan, just call a bank. At GE Capital, they're builders. What they know can help you grow. Professor Steve Sanders, what do you think that the court's refusal to take these cases tells us about what they're thinking about gay marriage?
A number of things. Actually, this was not as much of a surprise if you noted Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's public comments at the University of Minnesota Law School just about 2 weeks ago, in which she said neither she nor most of her colleagues were particularly eager to jump into this fight. I think they're aware that by historical standards, it is a little early for the Supreme Court to intervene. That is, as was noted earlier, we started the day with 19 states allowing same-sex marriage, 31 not allowing it. It would be a big deal for the Supreme Court to strike down the laws of that many states. Now we've suddenly, you know, overnight gone to a majority of the states where same-sex marriages will be possible soon and affecting about 65-66% of the population. This means when the Supreme Court eventually does weigh in, the Supreme Court itself will be striking down fewer states' laws. So I think the moderate, liberal progressives on the Supreme Court are a little bit concerned to not look like they're rushing into something, which we all know inevitably they're going to get into, but rushing into something in it with unseemly haste. And the conservatives on the court probably realize that Justice Kennedy, the swing vote, is going to vote in favor of same-sex marriage, and they don't have any reason to hasten that day of reckoning from their standpoint.
Greg, you know, before these cases got to the court, a lot of supporters of same-sex marriage were hoping that the Supreme Court would, in fact, take at least one of these cases to clarify things across the country, perhaps expecting a victory. How are they reacting to the court's decision to stay out of it today?
They are reacting like they have won a big victory, and they surely have because of the 11 new states and the perception that it is now going to be harder and harder for the Supreme Court to say same-sex marriage is not a constitutional right. They're not getting the big ruling, or at least at this point, they're not going to get the big ruling that says it's legalized nationwide, but they certainly are moving in the right direction and fairly rapidly. If I could just make one very quick point about Justice Ginsburg, because it's fascinating for those of us in the prognostic business. She did make those remarks at the University of Minnesota, saying the court didn't need to rush, but she also gave an interview to the Associated Press a few weeks before then when she said I think the court will not do what they did in the old days when they continually ducked the issue of miscegenation. If a case is properly before the court, a gay marriage case, they will take it. So we were getting mixed signals from Justice Ginsburg, and apparently what she said at the University of Minnesota was closer to what actually happened.
The politics of this issue have been contentious, but in light of the Supreme Court's refusal to get involved, Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes, who had defended Utah's gay marriage ban in court, called for a compassionate response.
It's time for people of goodwill on both sides of the issue to come together now and heal any rifts that had occurred. We are all Utahns, and I hope that we will exercise a great deal of kindness, caring, and understanding.
Well, on issues decided by the courts, that's not always how things go politically after the courts made a decision either to intervene or not. Professor Steve Sanders, do you think that the court's refusal to take action here and staying out of this issue will, in fact, calm down the political debate over same-sex marriage?
Well, you know, I think the debate has already started to calm down. I mean, we've had major rulings in state after state, federal circuit after federal circuit over the past more than a year now. And I think the reaction has been, it's been notable, these have been noticeable for the lack of negative reaction. The percentage of the population that is approved, that approves of same-sex marriage has steadily increased. Pollsters will tell you they've never seen such a rapid change in public opinion over such a short amount of time. To be sure, there are still a significant number of people in the country who disapprove of same-sex marriage. I think what you see, though, is the saliency of the issue is declining. That is, people don't like the idea, but it doesn't motivate them, or they're more resigned to the inevitability of legal same-sex marriage and the acceptance of same-sex marriage than they were, and many of those people are in the process of changing their minds themselves. So I think the justices and the judges who've ruled on these cases over the past year and a half are well aware that history is on their side, and that this issue is not what it was in 1996 or even in 2004 or 2006.
Well, one of the interesting things in the way that this has developed is that there have been debates about whether or not it makes sense to go a legislative route and let state legislatures decide this issue in the hope that the public would not be upset about courts telling them whether or not same-sex marriage should be legal. But now what we have is actually more courts ruling than state legislatures, it appears. Greg Storr, do you think that proponents of same-sex marriage are likely to abandon the legislative route now and stick with the courts?
They've essentially abandoned the legislative route already, and that's in large part because there are now so many states that have constitutional provisions that define marriage as being between a man and a woman that even in those states where the legislature might be amenable to making a change, you would have to go to the ballot. And they have perceived that the faster route for them is through the courts, and that has certainly been borne out.
So can we expect now, Greg, that there will be any place there hasn't been a lawsuit filed already, we're going to be seeing them very quickly?
There have been lawsuits filed in all 50 states, so there is a
mechanism. Then that would be more than even a yes.
I'm sorry?
That's more even than a yes to the question.
Yes. Maybe I shouldn't say all 50 states, but in every state where there is not already gay marriage, there is a pending lawsuit. So the litigation strategy is probably what ends up being the end game here.
All right. Steve, one of the things that's interesting about this, and I think that was so surprising, is that the court had previously indicated it might take up this issue, and in fact, I think it dismissed a case on standing grounds where everyone thought it was going to rule on the issue. And now the court has put itself in a position where if later it takes a case and invalidates the constitutional claim, that is, says that same-sex marriage is not constitutionally protected, there will be a lot of people in the country who have, under the auspices of these court decisions, gotten married, and it will cause quite an issue. What happens then? Is the court boxed itself in?
Oh, it's a fascinating question. It's a question I was just discussing with a couple of my colleagues at the law school today. I think it's really sort of uncharted territory. I think the answer has to be that those marriages remain valid. These are people who got married in good faith in states where the law, according to the Constitution, was that same-sex marriage was legal, and I think they would certainly have a strong argument that they were entitled to rely on that law and that any effort to retroactively take away their marriages would face some really, really serious constitutional hurdles. The state just can't come in and retroactively invalidate a marriage without good cause that's existed for a year or 2 years or 5 years. I think that's largely a theoretical question. I think everyone sees the handwriting on the wall that the Supreme Court, almost everyone, sees the handwriting that it's going to be 5-4, assuming no changes in the composition of the court. It's going to be 5-4. Justice Kennedy is going to be the swing vote, and inevitably the Supreme Court is going to give us same-sex marriage. Justice Kennedy is too concerned with his position in history. He has a track record of progressive or at least libertarian views on gay rights issues, and we know that there are four other solid votes on the court. So I think that's an interesting issue, but it's only going to happen if we get a new president and a justice leaves and the composition and political tilt of the court changes before they've taken up the issue.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, though, about what you just said is that there are four votes plus, of the liberals plus Justice Kennedy, but then there are another four votes which would seem to be pretty solidly against gay marriage, and it only takes four votes for the court to hear a case. Greg, why do you think that the conservative justices didn't want to bring this up?
Well, with the caveat that we are deep in the speculation here, one thing I'm hearing from people is that maybe, as the professor said, even inside the court, there was a perception that Justice Kennedy was going to vote in favor of same-sex marriage. So why bother to take it up if you're only going to lose if you're on the conservative wing? One other question that's interesting to me, while it may well be that it's a 5-4 ruling, the Chief Justice is going to be somebody, John Roberts is going to be somebody that everybody is watching. He was on the side of the opponents of gay marriage when the court heard a couple of cases, including the Defense of Marriage Act last year. But he's also somebody who's going to be very concerned about his own legacy, and if he sees the direction this is going, one does wonder whether he would want to be in dissent.
Well, another interesting question here, given that the court isn't going to be deciding these cases this year, is what exactly the courts are going to do with this going forward. Usually a denial of certiorari when the Supreme Court refuses to hear a case doesn't have any much precedential effect, but courts have been interpreting previous Supreme Court decisions, particularly Windsor, the Defense of Marriage Act case, as effectively legalizing gay marriage. Steve Sanders, do you think that the courts that have not decided this are going to be impacted by the court's refusal to take on these cases that have interpreted Windsor so broadly?
We can never know. Same caveat as Greg, we're deep into speculation. You can never know exactly what the thought process of a federal judge is in deciding how to vote and how to craft an opinion. I think federal judges are part of the same dialogue we're a part of now. I think they see handwriting on the wall. I think what happened today will be more significant because it will mean that more people are experiencing same-sex marriage, have the option of same-sex marriage, greater parts of the country get used to the idea. It comes to seem even more inevitable, and so that gives judges some sense of where society is on a question, which is an important consideration when you're dealing with constitutional law, when you need to strike a balance between fundamental rights and the modest role that courts are supposed to play in imposing social change. I think Windsor will continue to have more precedential value than what happened today. Just one thing, though. I think, Michael, you said that the court isn't going to hear the question this year. That's by no means the case. I mean, if the Sixth Circuit rules tomorrow against same-sex marriage, that panel had a couple of fairly conservative judges on it. I can almost guarantee you, we're going to see a granted cert petition in that case in the next month or two.
Well, thank you very much to our guests, Greg Storr of Bloomberg News and Professor Steve Sanders of the Morrow Law School at Indiana University. We've been discussing the Supreme Court's denial of certiorari and refusal to hear cases on same-sex marriage, 7 cases today. Thank you very much for an illuminating discussion, gentlemen. And let's take a look at one of the top stories on BloombergLaw.com. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to consider whether Abercrombie & Fitch stores violated Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act by allegedly refusing to hire a Muslim applicant because she planned to wear a headscarf while working. Abercrombie countered the real issue is whether a worker adequately informs an employer of a need for religious accommodation merely by wearing clothing associated with that religion. Well, that's it for this edition of Bloomberg Law. We'll be back tomorrow. And a reminder, you can find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com. And attorneys, you can find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well.
You can listen to Bloomberg Law weekdays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, in San Francisco on 960 a.m. and 103.7 FM HD2, and SiriusXM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014 Bloomberg LP.